Melbourne has been marred by protests for a third consecutive day, which are in breach of Victoria's public health orders. The demonstrations have been widely condemned, with protesters today gathering at the state's Shrine of Remembrance and a no-fly order brought in over the city. Their protests centre on mandated vaccination for the construction sector and led to a two-week shutdown of the industry. Today, vaccines were mandated for Victorian teachers and childcare workers. With more on this, the Victorian Deputy Premier and Education Minister James Molino joins me. James Molino, welcome.
Thank you, Patricia.
Are you expecting Victorian teachers to march as a result of today's mandatory vaccination announcement?
No, I don't. And, you know, my view of the education workforce is, you know, they're passionate about getting back to face-to-face teaching, getting the kids back in the classroom. We conducted a survey of education staff, and we had responses from about 33,000, 75% of whom are already fully vaccinated. So there's a huge chunk of our workforce that is already vaccinated. So I think teachers, administration staff, education support staff, cleaners, I think they'll all embrace it. Not everyone. You'll be hard-pressed to get to 100% on anything, but the vast, vast majority of education support staff, I think, will be supportive.
Why hasn't this been done earlier, and why not extend it to students as well?
Why it hasn't been done earlier is simply a question of supply, Patricia. You know, New South Wales are about a month ahead of us in terms of supply. They got additional supplies from the Commonwealth. So we've always been constrained by what have we got in the cupboard to get into people's arms in terms of who we can prioritise, who we can say it's a requirement for work. In terms of kids, children between 12 and 15 only became eligible for the vaccine from mid-September, and children under 12, there is no vaccine available for them. So we cannot therefore make it a requirement for kids, and that's never been our thinking. But because so many children are not vaccinated and are at risk of transmitting, the best thing to do, and it's the reason why our CHO has made this direction, is to ensure that where children engage with adults in early childhood settings, in every single school, any staff member who works in that school must be vaccinated.
You haven't offered priority access, and yet you've set a deadline of the end of November. How can you expect that cohort that hasn't been vaccinated to meet that deadline if you don't make sure that they can get in front of the queue? If you're a teacher, sure, or any other member of staff at a school, you're just going to get in immediately.
Sure, for a couple of reasons, Patricia. Firstly, we're at a point now where we've got confidence in supply. There is plenty of capacity now. So there's plenty of capacity. We're getting more GPs, more pharmacies. We announced a rollout of additional pharmacies yesterday. So in terms of capacity to make a booking, get your vaccine, that is there. Secondly, we've already got, as I mentioned, tens of thousands of education workers, teachers, support staff already vaccinated. So for those two reasons, the advice from public health is we've got plenty of capacity there. It's just a question of making sure that people have their first dose by the 18th of October. And that's an important date because that's the date, that's the week in which preps ones and twos go back to school. And then second dose, fully vaccinated by the 29th of November.
What happens if teachers and school staff refuse?
If people do not meet those requirements, both first and second dose, they will not be able to attend school. It's as simple as that. And it's a really, it's a clear message, and it's for teachers, admin staff, cleaners. If you are not first dosed by the 18th of October, second dose by the 29th, you cannot attend school.
Now, I want to go to the issues of preparing schools for restarting. I know you're going to work on the ventilation and all of this, but I've got to say, why has it taken so long? I mean, we've known about airborne transmission of this virus for some time. We're at the end of the year. Victorian students, as you know, as the minister, have missed out on so much education and really important milestones to their development. You need to fast track this, don't you?
And that's precisely what we're doing, Patricia. I mean, this is unprecedented. No other jurisdiction in the country has done something as significant as signing a contract for 51,000 air purification devices. We'll have the first load flown in by the end of next week, and we'll have the first numbers, the first thousands into schools in the first week of term four. But there has been a lot of work, like a mountain of work in the background. We've had CO2 monitors in a number of schools. We've had ventilation assessments. We've obviously done the previous work in our hotel quarantine system. We haven't been sitting on our hands, I can assure you. This is a significant announcement, and it's unprecedented in terms of how this country is responding to the pandemic and making sure that, you know, Sunday was about the roadmap and the dates as to when students return to school. Today is about sending a message of comfort and confidence to parents, teachers and students that when they do return to school, it'll be in the safest way possible.
With respect, those return dates for school, there's some time off. Again, students have missed out on so much. It's not just about their education. We all know, if you look at presentations to emergency, that actually this is a kind of mental health crisis for a lot of these young people. Isn't there any way you can bring some of this forward?
Patricia, believe me, as an education minister and a father of three school-age kids, I am desperate to get kids back to face-to-face teaching.
I'm seeing some really sad things, and I know you are too. It seems to me just too long.
So when you say too long, we'll have students in front of teachers earlier than the New South Wales, the Sydney return to school plan. So week one, we'll have our senior kids back, our final year students back. Week three, we'll have our preps ones, twos. Week four, we'll have grades three right through to year 11, staggered. And then after Melbourne Cup, full time. We've got almost 6,500 tutors supporting our kids that have struggled with remote learning and need academic catch up. We've got mental health practitioners rolled out to all of our government secondary schools. Wellbeing is our number one priority. And, you know, I see the figures as you do, Patricia. Mm. You know, we've got more emergency department presentations on eating disorders, suicidal ideation. There is a long mental health tail to this pandemic.
It's heartbreaking.
But that's being reflected in other states around the country, and it's a global phenomenon. We know that this has had a mental health impact, and that's why, you know, we want to get our kids back to school as quickly as possible. But importantly, with the announcements we made today around ventilation and some other mitigations, is to make sure that when our schools fully reopen, they stay open.
Okay, that's what I want to get you on. Can you guarantee that there will be no more school closures en masse after they go back?
That is always the intention of the national plan. You know, the national plan is about once we get to the 70 and then the 80 double dosed, we are not in the space of chasing zero, which we've already made clear. We're not chasing zero in Victoria. We have got our roadmap which is fully consistent with the national plan, and that means end to statewide lockdowns and into mass school closures. There will always be a Department of Health response to outbreaks in schools. So I'm not giving, and it would be foolish of any minister to give a guarantee that, you know, not one school will be impacted by the pandemic post 80%. But this is all about making sure that when our schools open, they stay open.
Just on the protest today, which have continued for a third day, what are your observations? The police moved in, got them out of the Shrine of Remembrance, but how concerned are you about this?
Oh, look, these are ugly scenes, and, you know, it's thuggery, it's criminality. But the point I've been making today at my press conference and elsewhere, Patricia, is that, you know, Victoria has a population of 6.6 million people. And these several hundreds of people do not reflect Victoria in any way, shape or form. And they're made up of some construction workers, yes, but also many right-wing extremists. And, you know, the utterly disrespectful behaviour at the Shrine of Remembrance. I don't think any Victorian, any veteran, would look at that behaviour over the last 3 days, but particularly today at the Shrine, and have any regard for these thugs.
This is going to go on, though, for days, potentially, right?
Potentially. You know, these thugs may choose to come out again tomorrow, and Victoria Police, you know, who have been brave and resolute, all Victoria Police members will respond accordingly. And, you know, there were arrests made yesterday, there are arrests made today, and if they choose to behave as thugs and a criminal mob, then Victoria Police will continue to deal with them. But I think what people saw today at the Shrine really exposes this mob for what they are.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Patricia.
James Molina, the Deputy Premier and Victorian Education Minister, 0418 226 576 is the text line.